I'm going to read from Psalm 86 first. And this is one of those messages that I'm not even sure what I'm going to say, so I hope that you're not, you may be thankful for the good preaching you normally hear once you're done with this. That's something to be thankful for. I don't know how to describe exactly in a short summation India for you. I don't know how to describe the trip. I'm not an expert. I've only been there for 12 days. Only seen one state out of 28 states in India. Every state in India speaks a different language. So even if you lived in India, it'd be pretty hard to be an expert on the people there. But I want to share a few things from my observations. They're just my observations. This is my perspective on what I've seen, what I've experienced. And if I had to use one word to describe an American going to India, particularly a gospel minister going to India, for me, I would use the word jarring. Every aspect, every bit of the experience when you get to India is jarring. It's jarring to the senses. I thought that I was prepared for what to expect. I'd seen pictures and heard stories for the last 10 years. And so I felt pretty confident that I would know what to expect when I got there. But from the very first moment that you get off the plane, and the first thing you want to do when you go off the other plane is you want to go to the restroom. Especially if you've been on the plane for about 10 hours, that's the first thing you want to do. From the very first moment you go in the restroom, you think, you know what, maybe not. Let's just wait till later. You realize it's a jarring experience. Everything is jarring to the senses. The smells, the things you see, the traffic, the language difference, everything about it is jarring. And I just want to share two jarring things that happened to me or that I saw while I was in India. And the first one is found in Psalm 86. This is the most jarring thing, one of the most jarring things that I realized. I'm going to read starting in verse 1. Bow down thine ear, O Lord, hear me, for I am poor and needy. Preserve my soul, for I am holy. O thou my God, save thy servant that trusteth in thee. Be merciful unto me, O Lord, for I cry unto thee daily. Rejoice the soul of thy servant, for unto thee, O Lord, do I lift up my soul. For thou, Lord, art good and ready to forgive, and plenteous in mercy unto all them that call upon thee. Give ear, O Lord, to my prayer, and attend to the voice of my supplications. In the day of my trouble I will call upon thee, for thou wilt answer me. Among the gods there is none like unto thee, O Lord, neither are there any works like unto thy works. All nations whom thou hast made shall come and worship before thee, O Lord, and shall glorify thy name. For thou art great and doest wondrous things. Thou art God alone. Teach me thy way, O Lord. I will walk in thy truth. Unite my heart to fear thy name. I will praise thee, O Lord my God, with all my heart, and I will glorify thy name forevermore. For great is thy mercy toward me, and thou hast delivered my soul from the lowest hell. O God, the proud are risen against me, and the assemblies of violent men have sought after my soul, and have not set thee before them. But thou, O Lord, art a God full of compassion, and gracious, long-suffering, and plenteous, and mercy, and truth. O turn unto me, and have mercy upon me. Give thy strength unto thy servant, and save the son of thine handmaid. Show me a token for good, that they which hate me may see it and be ashamed, because thou, Lord, hast holpen me and comforted me. I'd like to talk about the whole psalm, but let me just read three verses for you again. Verse 8. Among the gods there is none like unto thee, O Lord. neither are there any works like unto thy works. All nations whom thou hast made shall come and worship before thee, O Lord, and shall glorify thy name. For thou art great and doest wondrous things. Thou art God alone. Really, the most jarring thing that I experienced in India was to realize that these three verses are true. Let's read them again. Among the gods there is none like unto thee, O Lord. Neither are there any works like unto thy works. The nations shall come and worship before thee. Thou art great and doest wondrous things, and thou art God alone. There's really not anything more basic to the Christian belief than those thoughts, are there? There is one God. He is God alone. In fact, shortly before we went to India, I preached a series of messages to the church at Ripley on this very topic, pretty much. That there is one God. He is a supreme being. And if He is the supreme being, that changes everything. If we agree that He's a supreme being, that changes everything in relation to Him. Because if He is a supreme being, then therefore, if He really is supreme, then therefore we owe Him everything. We owe Him our worship. We owe Him our allegiance. We owe Him our devotion. We owe Him our service if He really is supreme. And the reason that I preach on these messages is because I realized that perhaps for the first time, I would preach to people who had maybe never heard the gospel before, Jesus Christ. And unlike where we are, I realized that the stories are true, that if we preach this message, and when we preach this message, we are saying, we want you, we are asking you, we are commanding you to embrace this message. We are asking you to embrace this concept that God is God and He is God alone. And if they do embrace that, it is very likely that their whole world will change. Now that's supposed to happen for all of us, right? Our worlds are supposed to change when we embrace the gospel of Jesus Christ. We say that when we go down to the waters of baptism and we rise up again, that we are rising to walk in a new life, right? Wanting to walk in newness of life. And that's supposed to be true. That's what God, that's actually what happens when a person is truly converted, right? Their life changes. It changes dramatically and it changes forever. They are no longer the same person. They are in Christ. They are a new creature. And that is true here. But in a very real and a very different way, that's going to be true to people who are embracing the truth of Jesus Christ with the greater influence of Hinduism and, oh, by the way, now in India, Islam, a much greater influence as well. It's going to come with a life change that is different than just the internal change of our hearts in following Jesus Christ. It may come with persecution, as it has already. It may come with as it has many times, with great family strife. It may come with all sorts of outside problems that will change your world. So, my thought was, I had better be very careful as to what I preach to these people if their life is going to change as a result. And so, what are those fundamental things that we absolutely must insist on in the Word of God? And this is pretty basic, right? That there is one God and that He is God alone. Now that's again seems so basic to us because that's we're Christians and we've always been in a Christian culture. Among the gods, there is none like unto thee, O Lord. I saw this to be so, so true in India from a negative standpoint. It's hard to describe. I think there's really two Indias. I'll describe the India that we saw the most. And the India that we saw the most is an India that is, in some ways, it's beginning to thrive in some ways. But at the same time, there is this intense fight for survival all the time. An intense fight for survival. Isn't that not right? The old people are broken down because they have struggled to provide enough for their sustenance for all their lives, and they're completely broken down. I never had realized, as we drove through the roads, the countryside, the value of grass before. Have you ever thought about the value of grass? That's pretty ever thought about that? Not really. But you see people laboring all day long, and then at the end of the day, taking the fruit of their labor on their heads, or however they can transport it, to take this grass, to either, I don't know what they always did with it. Sometimes they would, you would see it, dried on their, as their roof. You would see it laid out as a mat. It was fascinating to see the poor people who would raise corn or raise maize, and then they would need to thresh that grain. Do you know how they thresh the grain? Well, the poor people thresh the grain. Well, I'll tell you what they do. They stand on the side of the road, and they wait for you to drive by. And before you drive by, they throw it out in the road, and your tires run over it, and your tires, the weight of your tires, crush the maize. And so then they run back out there, and they sweep it up, and they take it home to make supper with. It's jarring. It's jarring to the senses to see the value of grass, the corn being broken, the crush of people. I've described it this way several times. India is two-thirds the size of the United States. It's a lop off the East Coast, praise the Lord. And maybe the West Coast, and you have two-thirds the size of the U.S., all right? Two-thirds the size of the U.S. with 1 billion more people. Imagine that. So there are people, souls, living souls, everywhere. Everywhere. There's a town close to us called Salem. It's where we went to shop and do things and get our money exchanged. Salem probably is somewhere around the size of Jackson, Tennessee, as far as the size of Jackson. Okay, a lot more big buildings, but the size of Jackson, with 3 million people in it. Imagine that. Jackson, Tennessee, 3 million people. So it's a crush of people. All the time. All the time. And it is a broken people. The looks on the faces are either blank or sad or tired. That's how I would describe them. Now, that is a sharp, sharp... I just was amazed at the sharp contrast from the people we saw in the towns to the children in the orphanages. The children in the orphanages were alive and joyful and happy and full of life, clearly under the influence of the gospel of Jesus Christ and the compassion that springs out from those who have been changed by Jesus Christ. But India is a land that is full of wonderful natural resources, a beautiful land. And yet it's a broken land. It's a superstitious land. It is really, it is a land where the most of the people are in a fight for survival every single day. And you contrast that with where we live, and it's impossible to contrast. You just, again, there's nothing that is like here. Nothing that is like here so far in this India, this part of India. So you clearly, when you see the brokenness of this land, you clearly say that among the gods, there is none like unto thee, O God. That's clearly seen. But I want to tell you the other jarring thing to me in relation to this, while we were in India, just a couple of days after we got there, I called Rachel. I was excited. I wanted to know. I said, Rachel, tell me how the elections turned out in Mississippi on Tuesday. And she said, we lost. And I was shocked. Were we not shocked? We just, tears rolled down. We were absolutely shocked. What she was referring to, was she referring to not to some person being elected, but she was referring to personhood in Mississippi. Now, you live in Tennessee, you've probably heard of it though. Personhood was this grassroots movement by Christians in Mississippi, a small group of Christians in Mississippi, to put on the ballot for the people, whether a infant at conception is defined officially as being a person or not. This is, has some great ramifications in that in Roe v. Wade in 1973, they actually, as the justices were questioning the side, the abortion side, they said, now tell us, if this embryo was defined, this fetus was defined as a person, this would totally obliterate your case, right? They said, absolutely. And so as a result of that, these people began to move and work to get the child who is at conception defined as a person. And it was a great movement. It had a great momentum. We thought there was no way that it would not pass. In the last 4 or 5 days, amazing politics. I have an email on my phone right now that shows the incredible crush of money that came into the state from New York and from Texas and from Pennsylvania and from everywhere that Planned Parenthood is. Only 6 people in Mississippi donated to the opposite side, and millions of dollars came in from out of the state. They were successful, confused people, and it did not pass. Not even close. Not even close. Not even close. In fact, only 1 million people in the state wouldn't even bother to go to vote on that Tuesday. That was incredibly jarring. Because here's the thing, friends. Among the gods, there is none like unto thee, O God. There are no works like the works of the one true God. Thou art great. Thou doest wondrous things. Thou art God alone. Because India has never recognized this fact, because Christianity has never had a powerful influence in India, you see the result in the brokenness of this nation. And here's the truth. The truth is that God is not mocked. He is God alone. He is jealous for His glory. He is jealous for His name, and He will not be mocked. But the truth of the matter is that we in America, many people in America, just don't believe that God will not be mocked. They don't believe it. We don't believe it. We believe that God will be mocked because we don't have to go out and throw grain into the road to have it threshed so we can have some food for tonight, do we? We think that we can continue and play with God in this way, and that He will just continue on in our way. And the truth is, we see India and you see how broken it is. You say, you know what? We can go to the exact same place. But if our economy blows, if our economy drops, all of the motor vehicles and all of these we have will mean nothing to us. We think that can never, ever happen. But the truth of the matter is that He is God. There are no gods beside Him. And He is God alone. And He will not be mocked. What you sow, you also will reap. Reap. You see, the reason that is so shocking about that personhood, because I always assumed this. I always assumed that it was a bunch of liberals, and I'm not talking politics tonight, but this is just real life where we are, that it was the people in power that are wicked, have wicked minds. It is the justices, it is the legislators, it is the presidents, it is the people in high office that have the evil mindsets and have the evil philosophies. But if you put it into the hands of the people, people with good common sense, especially in the Bible Belt, especially in Mississippi, that the people will always do the right thing because the people are good at heart. And I firmly believe that. But in Mississippi, the center of the Bible Belt, supposedly the most conservative state in the Union, we cannot even decide if a person is a person or not. We get confused by a few ads in the last couple of days saying, well, what if this happens? It's shocking, isn't it? God is God alone. And we'll see that. He'll show that to us. He will prove that. He's determined to show that He is God alone. So from the negative standpoint, that's true. But I want to tell you also from the positive standpoint, there are no works like the works of God. There just aren't. There's a sign that you see when you first walk into the India, and it's everywhere. The sign is, welcome to incredible India. And it's true, right? There's 2 signs. There's 3 signs. Incredible India. Sound your horn. That's everywhere. And people do it. And the 3rd sign that got their attention was, please do not spit on the walls of the subway. Incredible India. India's a gorgeous place. Mountains, vegetation. It's also an incredibly ugly place. It's nasty. So let me go back. Just one more point that I'm making before I just thought of. Our last night there, Betty had to rebuke us a little bit. We were sitting, it's kind of a surreal scene. We're sitting in a hotel room. waiting for our, we got off the train in the hotel room, waiting for our plane in Chennai, India, which is the ugliest, it's the biggest but nastiest big city, a city of 8 million people and garbage everywhere. It just rained, so it was especially nasty. And we're sitting in a hotel room waiting for our plane, eating Pizza Hut. Timothy had ordered out for us. He did an amazing job. It was kind of this mixture of English and Spanish and Tamil and just all kind of things. We got two pepperoni pizzas, which we were just absolutely thrilled to have. And so we're sitting here eating pepperoni pizza, and two guys come to visit us. A guy named Vimal and his brother. I forget how Timothy had met them before, and they wanted to come visit us. And we had this really, really wonderful guys, and we had this had a great conversation about God, and they're avid theological readers and theology, and I finally got down to kind of a comparison of America and India, and Daddy kind of had to get on to it and said, boy, you're saying too many bad things about America, but it was just so real in our hearts, because it's not that I came back despising America, not at all. You don't know how thrilled I was to step into New Jersey, okay? Even Jersey, I was thrilled to be in Jersey. It was thrilling to be there. But the thing that just grabbed me again and again and again was to weep and to grieve over what we are losing. God bless us to go upon our faces. We began to kind of compare America and India. And here's what they said. They said, here's the other India, okay? There's India that's fighting for survival. There's other India that's very, very wealthy and this other side of India is what he's talking about. Very wealthy, very forward-moving, very forward-thinking, all these kind of things. They said, India is desperate. And we said, India is desperate to become America. Okay? So they're desperate to become America. We have these conversations with his friends all the time. But let me tell you how their desperation is manifested. Their desperation is manifested by their Bollywood, which is their version of Hollywood. Their desperation is manifested in their entertainment, their television shows, their fashion, their changes in fashion. And the other two things they mentioned was they're desperate in things that were unthinkable just a short few years ago, in that the rise of extramarital affairs and divorce is increasing very quickly. And that's what their idea, that side of India, that's what their idea of America is. And he said, I tell my friends all the time, he says, why cannot we adopt the good things of America? Things like picking up our trash and not throwing it out. Why can't we adopt that? But they're not interested in that. Interested in that at all. They're interested in becoming what they think America is. And so, again, from the negative side, there are no gods like God. Thou art God alone. But from the positive side, it's true, too. Because the most incredible thing that we saw, that I saw while I was in India, was the effect of regeneration, of a new life in Jesus Christ, manifested in the hearts and lives of real people living in sometimes very difficult circumstances, following and serving and trusting God with a thirst to know more about Him, a thirst to follow Him, a thirst to learn from Him. In fact, the reason this psalm grabbed my attention, and I don't know if you hear this or not, the reason this psalm grabbed my attention, there's three psalms that grabbed my attention while I was in India. Psalm 34, it says, I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. That's the psalm that talks about the angels of the Lord are round about them that fear Him and deliver them. It says that many are the afflictions of the righteous, for the Lord delivereth him out of them all. And in Psalm 43, a short psalm, it talks about, why art thou cast down, O my soul, and why art thou disquieted within me? Hope in God, for I shall yet praise Him, who is the health of my countenance and my God. And then Psalm 86. The reason that these psalms grabbed my attention so much was I'll never, ever, ever forget this moment. It was, I think, Saturday evening, the first Saturday we were there, and I thought at that point that I had seen all of India. I had my iPad and my iPhone. We had taken videos of everything. I was like, my eyes were wide open. In fact, for those of you who met this, the thing that was really funny for us, we'd seen all these different sights. We'd seen cows in the road, cows blocking our path. I'll never forget this old crippled woman on a cane who decided to cross the interstate just as we were driving toward her. That's not unusual at all. And usually, they learn how to avoid people. But she froze, and I'll never forget. She started to go back the wrong way. She's on a cane. She's been over just like this. And she turned to look at us, and there was this look of incredible fright on her face. And we just slammed on our brakes on the interstate to keep from hitting her. Again, just things like that you see, your eyes are just wide open all the time. We saw one weed eater there in India, but the medians were meticulously clean. You know, and the reason why, because if you have 1 billion people in a place 2/3 the size of the United States, you've got plenty of labor force. And so instead of weed eaters, you had people on the side of the interstate pulling the grass, picking the grass. And then those little hands, the little broom sweeping the dirt back up onto the median. And that's what they did all day long. The highway crews were, and the roads were pretty good. Most of them were pretty good. The highway crews were women and men, no barriers, no flashing lights, just right in the middle of the interstate, down their hands and knees with squeeze bottles of, I guess, tar, squeezing tar into the cracks on the highways. It's just so different. So I thought at that point I had seen everything that India had to show me. On the Saturday night, we went to this place where they minister to children, and actually there's a crippled man, I forgot his name, but a crippled man in a wheelchair who does most of this work with these children in this village. And we pull into this village, and immediately I knew that this is a little bit different, because again, there's people everywhere, but the crush is kind of like, they're like this, and then like this, and like this, and like this. At this point, we're pulling this little alley, and it's like there's people everywhere. It's dark, the Hindu music is blaring, and it's just a kind of a creepy place, and it was the worst slums that I saw. In fact, when I stepped out of the car, there's this house right next to me, so I kind of looked in it, and this house is about 4.5 feet high. All you need for a house there is 4 poles and some grass. And that's what it was. There's 4 poles and some grass at 4.5 feet high, about 6 feet deep, 6 feet long. And so I looked in there, and there's a mat laid out there, and the mat is about, 6 to 12 inches from an open sewer. That's where they were going to sleep on. And you knew it was just a horrible place. And so we're walking back to this little alley, to this block building where they minister to these children. And what they do is they feed the children breakfast, they feed the children supper. The children have parents. But the parents are, of course, greatly impoverished. And most of the parents in this particular place where these children were, most of these parents go to a city called Bombay, to find work. But while there, they're not moral people, and they engage in illicit behavior. And so most of the parents of these children have AIDS. This village is full of AIDS. And so that's who we were going to be talking to. And so we're sitting there, these children facing us, and it's just your heart just is beating, and it's just going out to these children. Some of their mothers, I think, who are not Christians, were sitting back behind them, these women with AIDS, and these children are sitting there. So we're going to talk to them, and I preached to them that night. But before they did, they wanted to take them to us. And so, one at a time, some of the children stood up, and they quoted to us Bible verses, whole psalms. And these are the psalms they quoted. And I will never look at Psalm 34, Psalm 43, and Psalm 86 the same way. So you have a child that stands up, and you know that his parents have AIDS. You know that they're not providing for him. You know that his only nourishment is coming from breakfast and lunch, breakfast and dinner from this crippled man who is ministering to them. And he stands up and says, I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. He quotes, another girl got it, quotes, teach me thy way, O Lord. I will walk in thy truth. Unite my heart to fear thy name. Thou art God alone. Thou art great. Thou doest wondrous things. I will praise thee, O Lord, my God, with all my heart. And I will glorify thy name forevermore. For great is thy mercy toward me. And thou hast delivered my soul from the lowest hell. I will tell you, I will never, ever, ever look at those psalms the same way.
You see, the way that's in that condition, that can stand up and say these things from the heart and mean it. So the thing that I can tell you a story, it's that similar vein of people who are seeking to follow and serve the Lord and love the Lord, and in the midst of harsh circumstances, continue to love and serve Him. And they're not looking to become Western or looking to get rich or anything else. They're just serving the Lord where they are. And I tell you, friends, only God can do a work in the hearts and the lives of people to give them a love for Him in the midst of such difficult places. And so verse 13 says, "For great is thy mercy toward me, and thou hast delivered my soul from the lowest hell." So the last thing that I'll tell you that I realized while I was there is this, is that there is something far worse. There's something far worse than the fight for survival. As ugly and as hard and as sad as a fight for survival is, we were able to see that in people's eyes and people's brokenness and people's lives. There was a man and his little girl who came to ask for prayer. He's just, I don't know if he's Hindu or what, but he's just been attending church there for a short time. It's clear that he's desperate. He's looking for something. His little girl's about 2 years old, a sweet little thing. She was the only toddler that let us get near her. It's kind of funny. Every other toddler, without exception, every single toddler, when they saw us, we were within 10 feet, would scream like a banshee and throw their face into their mother's arms or grab their dad's legs. They were scared to death. They had never seen white people before. They were scared to death. And the older children were a lot easier, but the funny thing was, with the older children, they would come to you, and we had a few icebreakers. We'd play with them to kind of get them, and they were much more eager to shake your hand or say what little English they knew, which is usually, "Hello, my name is," or not hello, just their name. And yet, when they would finally feel comfortable with you, they would kind of walk to the side of you, and they'd reach up their hand, and they'd touch your face. They wanted to see what white skin felt like. And that was pretty interesting. But this man and this little girl, his wife, just a few days ago, the fight for survival had become too much for her, and she'd killed herself. And so he was obviously desperate and wanting to hear from the Lord. And the love for him and his daughter was just incredibly precious. And so you see that, you think things like that, you think that's so horrible. But what's far, 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 far more horrible than that? There's a lower hell than that. And that is not knowing God. And so you see people who may still be in really harsh things, but they know the Lord and they love the Lord. And they've been delivered from the lowest hell. So they're okay. They're good. And so I am so thankful tonight that God has delivered me from the lowest hell. He has made me to know Him in His Son, Jesus Christ. And so I'm incredibly grateful and thankful on this night. God bless you.